All right, hour two, the home team is presented by Athens Technical College. Your passion, your future elevated. Chris Brame, Jeff Dantzler with you till 7 as we get set for today's 5 at 5. Ole Miss having a hard time putting away Southeast Louisiana in a game played last year. It's 34-23 with about 3 minutes to go in the third quarter. So we'll see how this thing ends up. On the SEC Network.
Yeah, they've got to be just scrolling through. Although tonight they're showing two SEC versus SEC games. But I was just guessing, were they just showing non-conference wins and maybe just from the West? I don't know. But
well, we do have, you said, Florida, Kentucky's coming up, right?
Yes, and Alabama, South Carolina. So they must just be picking three or four games from, say, week one, week two, and I guess they're on week three now. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a little bizarre what the schedule is. But as you pointed out, even though it was a non-conference win and they only had – two total wins last year. Even if you're a diehard Arkansas fan, I don't know about pulling out that 20-13 over Portland State, if that was a great watch. Yeah, I mean, even if you loved your Hogs,
what Arkansas fan, even though they know this is, hey, this is one of the two games we won last season, like, I wouldn't want to watch that again.
Isn't it funny, though, too? Like, for me, I love my Bulldogs. If our 26-24 win over Nichols State was on, I wouldn't care to watch that. I mean, that was just one. And, I did an interview with Kirby before we went to the Sugar Bowl against Texas, and I said, think about this. 2 years ago, we eked one out against Nichols State. You should have seen the look on his face, just like, oh, my God. And now here we are, Rose and Sugar back-to-back years.
You know, thanks for reminding me.
Like, he's like, you know, just to think how far we had come to almost losing to Nichols State to, you know, we go Pasadena and New Orleans back-to-back years. So, and listen, every school has had one of those. And those are ones where you are just, oh, thank goodness you're just so fortunate to escape in those.
Yeah. You didn't remind them we had lost to Vandy also?
No, I left that out.
Okay, yeah. At least Nichols, we did win that game.
It is that 2016 season, though, and it's, and especially after the loss to you-know-who, it was like you just kind of – we had three just implausible losses at home the way they all went down. It was almost at that point, it's like, listen, let's just – get all this stuff out of our system, and that certainly helped get Nick and Sony back too.
Yes, and it's a point I've made to you in the past that I know you don't want to hear, but occasionally Tech will beat Georgia, and it's best to do it in years like 2016.
When we had already...
Yeah, right. It's best to, if you're going to lose to Tech, which is going to happen from time to time, those are the types of years where it's better to do it.
And basically, when Tennessee hit that Hail Mary, any chance at having a great season was done.
Yeah. Now, Southeast Louisiana recovers a fumble inside the 10 and cashes it in. So, pending the extra point, they're down 34-29. Well, they're going to go for two, try and make it a three-point game with a minute and a half to go in the third quarter in Oxford. Yeah, this is a game, too. I'm guessing Ole Miss fans are like, they're gonna scroll right past the SEC Network when they see this game is on.
And I'm looking too. Ole Miss was 1-1 coming in. I guess they lost to Cal maybe the week before, and that was controversial. Southeast Louisiana had an open date, so this was probably a letdown look ahead for the Rebels.
I think. Well, the Rebels had beaten Arkansas. I think Ole Miss might have like opened with somebody last year, because I think the Cal loss was after this.
So it was probably the week after this then. So this was probably squeezed between Arkansas and Cal.
Yeah.
If I had to guess.
Yeah.
So it was a classic letdown look ahead.
They might have been looking ahead to a big showdown with Cal.
And just strange. And, you know, speaking about replays, it's like, well, wait, you're not going to stop to see that?
Yeah, I know. And that game was in Oxford, too, which makes it even stranger.
Yes, just more bizarre.
All right, let's get into the 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Jeff, word today that the NFL is canceling two preseason games. They will, in effect, all teams will no longer play their first and their fourth preseason game. So they'll just play their second and third preseason games, and have the first preseason game will be played the week of like August 20th and August 24th, and then the following week will be the second preseason games. And they'll be, I guess, a week off, and then they'll start the season. I'm sure many will say, like, well, okay, good. We don't need four preseason games anyway. The idea here, with really no off-season workouts, once training camps do begin later on this month, that the players are going to need a little bit more time to get themselves in shape before they actually do play a game, even if it is only a preseason game. So between shortening the preseason, what else we've got? A runner at second base to start extra innings in baseball. Among things that might change because of this this time that we're in with sports, rank your favorites now of what you like the most about things that are different, that maybe, hey, there's some good changes that could come out of this.
I think the top three, Chris, would be the potential of, and it's probably thrust upon them, the December through August NBA schedule, which I'm guessing the 2020-2021 season will have to be. I would say putting that runner at second, especially a lover of baseball and a broadcaster of baseball. I love the game. But, man, oh, man, when a game goes to the 13th or 14th, everybody, players included, yeah, you want to win, but you're ready to get home. And I think with the NFL going to two, this is a chance for them to at least wink at that, because there has been some talk about the 18-game schedule. And if they do that, the two preseason games makes enough sense. I mean, I think – well, don't you agree that two is all you need anyway?
Yeah, I think that's fine. But
the last one, the fourth one is – I mean, you're essentially – having players battle for the last two or three roster spots, and none of your starters are playing. And I also think it would be good if you just have two to give the teams a little extra time to get healthy, to get ready, to get to work with themselves for that season opener.
Now, as a fantasy football owner, it's going to give me less time to really scout players, though,
mm-hmm.
having two fewer games.
Well, that's where you just, you know, you have to trust your keen instincts and sneak a peek at the draft and think, okay, you know, who here of guys that I've seen in college, who here could step right in? Like, I've got to think, wouldn't you think, and I know most fantasy leagues, the running backs are the number one spot. I mean, I've got to think Edwards-Helaire and Swift are both going to be hot commodities.
Edwards-Helaire will be for sure. I guess the issue that fantasy owners will have with Swift is that the Lions still also have Kerryon Johnson. So
very true, very true.
You know, he's not going to – I mean, Kerryon Johnson's not going to stop playing all of a sudden. He's good, which also makes it kind of strange that, like, why the Lions take Swift in the that high in the second round, but not all in – that's why the Lions haven't – they've never been to a Super Bowl, I guess. And they've got that bearded backward hat guy as their coach
with the pencil.
Yeah, but like the Chiefs, like, you know, like Edwards-Helaire is the guy now. That's, you could see where that's in Andy Reid's eyes. That's Brian Westbrook 2.0.
Well, and the deal too, I think with Edwards-Helaire, Kansas City, they didn't really have that true frontline back. I mean, they're so innovative at what they were able to do with a tremendous amount of talent. I mean, with Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, and of course our own Mecole Hardman, and Travis Kelce is one of the best tight ends. And so now they've got a tremendous back to throw in there too. And oh yeah, Mahomes is a really good runner as well.
Well, and that's the thing with Mahomes is, like, you know, I'm not going to have those two extra preseason games to figure out whether or not I need to have him on my fantasy team or not.
You know, Mahomes is one of those guys, too, just with his running that, you know, if it's third and four, if things are breaking down, he's going to get you 5 or 6 yards. He's going to go right past the sticks. And it's like, good gosh, we finally covered all these receivers, and then we can't contain this quarterback.
Do you think, like, with the NFL, the way the offseason has been? Because my thought with some of these – the like some of these college teams, the ones that have had new coaches now that have basically had an entire offseason that has been, you know, there hasn't been one. That to me, like these schools are going to have a hard time this upcoming season. I mean, like Arkansas with Sam Pittman, Michigan State with Mel Tucker moving over there. Any school that's brought in new coordinators, new coaches, it's going to be really hard on them. Is the NFL, should we view it the same, or is it no? It's just a completely different league, and that's not as big of a deal, because you do have like, all right, well, Dallas, they got all their players back. You know, they finally got some deal done with Dak Prescott, but they've got Mike McCarthy in there now. But you think of like Kansas City, like, well, they got everything back basically from that Super Bowl team last year. So are they just going to be at a bigger advantage than everyone else, or it's not as big a deal in the pros as it is in college?
Hey, that's a great question, Bramer. I think it might be slightly less, but still a huge advantage to have your guys back. And I think especially when you look at, I mean, the two teams that we're going to be bullish on are Baltimore and Kansas City. They've both got excellent coaches and great quarterbacks, and they've got their pieces around him. Baltimore had a tremendous draft, and Kansas City picked another instant superstar. So I think helping ease those guys in, it would certainly lend you to believe that both of those teams would be at the top again this season.
Yeah. And that's like, so even with New England, where now they're bringing in Newton to start running the show there. But okay, you know, Buffalo, their guy's still there. Heck, even the Jets have had Sam Darnold in their system a while.
Right.
Like, I feel like if it was college, it'd be like, well, that's, you know, for New England, that would be a setback. But in the pros, you don't think of it so much as maybe being a negative.
No, I would agree. I mean, it still is an advantage if you've got your guys back. But I think in the pros, probably a little bit less.
Yeah. Now, for the Falcons, the second and third preseason games are Buffalo and Cincinnati. So we will miss the Dolphins. So no Tua, and I guess the Falcons then won't play the Jaguars. So we'll get Fromm and Burrow on Atlanta's schedule this year in the preseason.
No, that's a cool thing there. And I think when that first preseason game does get played, however it looks, it's always exciting to get football back. If memory serves, remember when I was a wee lad, that Hall of Fame game was usually like on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon that last weekend in July. Just like, oh my gosh, we've got a football game. And I can remember just getting excited. And that's the other thing, too, about the preseason. By the time that second one's up, you're like, all right, it's cool to see games, but now we want to see games for real, which also gets us back to, you know, when we were ranking our sports months, August was right there at the bottom, because you got a pretty good idea of who's going to make the playoffs in baseball, and September's more important in baseball anyway, and you're so close to football that, I mean, how many times have you run through every team's schedule and depth chart? At that point, especially in college, you're just ready to go ahead and get it cranked up.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to run through Georgia's depth chart? We haven't done that this year, have we?
I know. I mean, only
what's that O-line going to look like, Jeff?
Four times a week. I mean, and by the time you're up and going, I think everybody's just ready to go. And you know the players are, too. Usually by, if you figure a month, kind of give or take, for full contact, the first couple of weeks, you're figuring out who's starting, who's playing, and then by about the middle of week three, when you're putting in the stuff for the other team, you're ready to get out there and play. You're tired of beating on each other in the heat.
Speaking of depth charts, Jeff, what for you this year, looking at Georgia's schedule, are some of the most troubling opponent position groups that Georgia will face?
Alabama wide receivers. Although
yeah,
you would think
that's my number one, too.
I would say Bama wide receivers. And although the thing, though, Bama's receivers and Bama's O-line against Georgia's DBs and D-line, those will be – I would imagine the scouts will be keeping an eye on that. Is that an outlandish prediction?
No, I like our secondary.
Yeah. I mean, so those will be some great individual matchups there. I like what Bo Nix has got. I think he's got just a lot of those intangibles. Looking ahead, I think Tennessee's offensive line, you got to think, how are they going to look by the middle of November because there's some big-time recruits there with that unit. South Carolina's defensive line worries me, even with Kinlaw being gone. And Kentucky also has a chance to have a really good offensive line.
Yeah. Nothing about Vandy or Missouri worries you?
I hope not.
Yeah, nothing should. What about Tech? You didn't mention Tech.
I hope nothing worries me too much there. Yeah. I do think they're going to be a lot better. I'll tell you, I mean, if Sims is ready at quarterback, he gives him a shot.
You know, I didn't hear you mention anyone on the Gators either.
I think if our quarterback's as good as their quarterback, I like us at virtually every position.
Against Florida? Well, we should. I mean, just look at the last 4 years in recruiting. Georgia's been out-recruiting them by a pretty substantial margin.
The O-lines might be a wash. I think we're better at running back. Receiver, I mean, they lost most of their guys, too. And on defense, I'll take us at every spot, especially with Zunigan. Who was a linebacker for them? Grenard, number 58.
Yeah,
that guy's really good.
I guess
too.
It followed Grantham from Louisville.
Yeah, I mean that guy was a really good player too. So they lost both of them. Unless Florida's going to always have players, we know that. But I, you know, maybe they'll beat us. But I wouldn't trade any of our position groups. I wouldn't trade Newman for Trask. I think Trask is really good, but I'd rather have Newman.
Yeah, I mean, Trask is. Yeah, I mean Trask is the guy that's getting all the preseason hype, and it's almost just like by default he's going to be considered the top quarterback in the SEC. But you know, for me, like Mac Jones is the one that I think everyone is asleep on with the Bama's offensive line and the fact that he's got probably two first round wide receivers to work with. And you look at his numbers last year in the Iron Bowl and against Michigan, two really good defenses. Like he's going to have good stats.
Yeah, I would if we were picking an all-SEC team, Jones would be my quarterback for sure.
Yeah, he'd be mine.
I mean, his numbers are going to be good. And here's the thing too, Bramer. You mentioned the receivers. They got two great ones. One we know extremely well.
Now, that guy didn't turn pro?
They've got a tremendous offensive line. They're going to have really good backs. I mean, that's the – yeah, he's the bet, and he got kind of the silver lining of the injury situation with Tua. He got significant snaps. I mean, I know they lost that Auburn game, and he threw two pick sixes. One of them wasn't his fault, but again, the guy started the Iron Bowl, and he started the Citrus Bowl against Michigan. So this guy's got starts against Auburn and Michigan. He's going to be ready.
And he threw seven touchdowns in those two games.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good. So I think Jones would be the QB for sure.
Jeff, moving on in the 5 at 5, late in yesterday's show, we found out that Tony Grimes, the DB from Virginia, right? He's
yes,
up
sir.
In Virginia. He
yep.
committed to North Carolina. Then today, Dallas Turner commits to – he goes Roll Tide. He goes to Bama. So in the last 2 days, these targets that Georgia certainly was after, Grimes and Turner, they go elsewhere. Where is where does Georgia turn now as far as guys to target, and how does your recruiting board look right now with those two names off it?
Yeah, I think those were two of the top out of state guys, but they had been trending to the spots that they committed here for the last couple of months. It is interesting though with Grimes, he says he's still taking his visit, so we'll see how that plays out. So I think now your top targets for Georgia. Let's look and start on offense. You got Amarius Mims and Terrence Ferguson on the offensive line, certainly. Deion Colsey from just down the road at receiver. On defense, Smile Mondon obviously is a top priority for Georgia at linebacker. And then I think you're going to probably peek around and try and go out of state and get another defensive lineman or two. And then the big, big, big fish out of state is James Williams, who projects as a safety, who has been trending Georgia 100% crystal ball Georgia for a long time. So right now, I mean, if I had a wish list right now, I would say Mims, Mondon, Ferguson, Colsey in-state, and Williams out-of-state.
All right. Well, Mims, Mondon, and Ferguson are all crystal balling at 100%. Colsey still is... He's got a small Notre Dame percentage on him, but he was committed there at one point, wasn't
he? He was, yes.
Yeah, so he's not anymore, so they've got Georgia as the favorite for him out of all those guys out of the state.
Yeah, but there, you know, it seems like Turner had been – it was kind of between Georgia and Bama, and the feel was that Bama was kind of the favorite there. But with Grimes, I think Georgia was probably – leading a little bit, but one of the stories I read, and we talked about this yesterday, was that Dre Blythe's from the Virginia Beach area, and again, making Brame and I feel old, that he's a secondary coach at Carolina there. So I think that connection being from the area is probably what put Carolina over the top.
Turner also gives now Bama 5 of the top 12 prospects from the state of Florida.
It's incredible.
Committed to the Tide, and checking in on the state of Florida. Now, the Gators do have 100% projections for 2 players in the top 10, but you've got us favored to get James Williams. Tennessee's mm-hmm. got that linebacker, Terrence Lewis, who committed to them back in, I guess, April or May.
Right.
Michigan's got a guy, then you got Bama. Ohio State's got a guy, Oklahoma's got a guy, and then Turner at number 10 commits to Bama today, and then Bama's got another number 12, and then they're 100% to land number 11, so... Bama's got it cooking in the state of Florida, and not cooking in the state of Florida, schools that are in the state of Florida.
Yeah, the biggest get Florida is going to pull in probably is that defensive tackle. I think his name's Leonard Taylor.
Leonard Taylor, yeah.
They are having a very good year. I mean, I'll give it – they're recruiting defensive linemen very well, and that's always – worrisome there is, again, those guys are just the hardest to find. But, you know, it's just one of those years because Auburn, with the top guys, is doing better than Bama in the state of Alabama. But they have really planted their flag in the Sunshine State. So, again, that's one of those there. And, I mean, Florida State, you know, so often we recruit head-to-head with them, particularly in South Georgia. But, I mean, for everybody, you kind of need for – you know, you don't want them to become superpowers, but you at least want Florida State and Miami to, you know, to be good and competitive to put a dent into Florida some.
Yeah, but, yeah, Florida's got those 2 kids, Taylor and then his high school teammate, Jason Marshall, are both, you know, right now they've got 100% to go to Florida. You think that team will be good?
Yes, I do. That's then, like, who was it? Was it Tyson Campbell and... was it Patrick
and Patrick Surtain? Yeah,
those are like the starting corners.
Yeah, like I mean, how did a team ever complete a pass?
I don't know. I mean, they were considered 2 of the top 3 or 4 cornerback prospects in all of high school football. They played. It's like that team in San Diego had Alex Smith and Reggie Bush.
Yeah, I know. That's not even fair. Almost.
No, it's
so
not.
Those 2 kids right now look like they're strong leans to Florida. Florida State's got a commitment from one guy, and then you've got the Gators have a commitment from another one. Miami finally checks in there, but then there's Florida again, Miami again, Miami again. So Florida State's only got 1 out of the top 25 in the state. Miami's got a couple, but the rest are the Gators are at least getting them, but that's not good for us. We need, like you said, we need Florida State to start throwing its weight around a little bit more.
But, you know, you think about it too, Chris, kind of back in the – when Miami was rolling, when Florida State was on top, when Spurrier was at Florida, just, you know, think back, say, to 1992, 1993. Like, can you imagine that – what was it, 8 of the top 10 guys in the state of Florida would be either committed or leaning out of state?
No, never.
There's no chance.
No, but that's where they are. I wonder, has Texas got it reined back in with Jimbo and Herman? Because was it like 2 or 3 years ago, everyone in Texas was like going to Ohio State.
Ohio State's still doing well in Texas. Let me pull. I don't think we've got an in with anybody there this year. But we've gotten some good pulls from Texas because we got Lindbergh and Kimber out of there this past. And I guess the kicker Zirkle's from there too, isn't he?
Well, we did have a letter of intent signed from Zach Evans, but
yeah, that's
he ended up not here.
No, he did not. Which
Where did he get TCU, right?
Which, that's fine.
Yeah, that's
like,
good.
Oh, God, I don't want him to go to Florida or Tennessee. All right, let's see. Texas, it goes Ohio State, and then the best offensive lineman in the state, named Tommy Brockermeyer. It's between Ohio State and Texas. And then it goes 3 through 5, Longhorns, Aggies, Longhorns. Then it goes, oh, and excuse me, that lineman Brockermeyer, now Alabama's leading, of course. Well, yeah, so they go Ohio State commit. The offensive lineman's leaning Bama. Then it goes Texas commit, A&M 100%, Texas commit. Then 6 through 8 goes Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. And Tennessee got a dual threat quarterback from there. And then the next two guys are LSU, LSU.
Oh, is that dual threat quarterback? Was he Zach Evans? Remember when Jeremy Pruitt thought he was getting a visit with Zach Evans, and then he showed up at that school? And
I think that's it. Is that Cedar Hill, Texas? Does that sound right?
Is that where Zach Evans was?
I'm not sure. But, yeah, this guy, I mean, he's committed there. Then you got a guy, Auburn, Texas A&M, Texas, Texas Tech, Texas A&M. You kind of get into that second 10 of the in-staters. Miami's got a tight end, then Oklahoma, Baylor, SMU. But I'll tell you, this time last year, kind of projecting ahead, Texas looked like it was going to really clean up. But I think they're doing good. They're probably the best of the in-state teams right now. But, you know, Ohio State's got that. One of those assistant coaches has got some big-time Texas connections there. But that's
– that O-lineman Brockermeyer appears to have a I would assume it's a twin brother.
Oh,
they don't
yeah,
really,
he's down the
They don't
list.
Really look alike, but he's also heavy lean Alabama, so.
Funny how that works.
Yes, Alabama might be now, because the one brother is the number one rated player in the state, then this other one is ranked 32nd.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that is his twin.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they would have to be twins, I guess,
sure.
If they're basically the same. The same recruiting class,
yeah,
but they
exactly.
don't—they don't look identical, at least in the photos that they've got on the website here. But yeah, Bama's going to end up with two of them, and so, they got good O lineman names too. I mean, come on, Brockermeyer.
Oh, Brockermeyer's fantastic. Yeah. In fact, let me look and see how 2020 came out in Texas. So this past. So this past class, like the guys who just signed, it went Alabama, shocking. Hang on, the computer's loading kind of slow. Number 4 went to A&M. Here we go. Texas in order. It went Alabama, Ohio State, Aggies, Texas, TCU. That's Zach Evans. Texas, Aggies. Oklahoma, Texas. And then Jalen Kimber, who signed with us, was rated 11th. And then Texas didn't get anybody 10 through 18. They got 19, 20, 22. But then they got 4 of the rest between 27, 6 of the rest, 7 of the rest between 27 and 37. So, again, Texas did very well. But, again, you know, the top two ranked guys are going Bama and Ohio State. The next two going A&M.
Yeah, but it still looks better than it did a couple of years ago.
Oh,
though.
For sure. I still think for Texas, their big thing, Herman's really good. But the deal is, I still look at them, and I know they beat us 2 years ago, and Ellinger had that great game. It's hard to go through a season like that without getting your quarterback beat up. I still look at them just like when Mac was there. I don't see much of an offensive identity. Like, there are a couple of elite receivers from last year and this year's class who are looking at A&M. I get it, the way they throw the ball. So, you know, if I'm Texas, let's either get out there and throw the ball, or with the recruits they're getting, how do you not get some stud tailback in there?
Well, they need to – they also just need to get over that hump of being that program that you look at and like, yeah, sure, they can go and they could go and win at LSU this year, but then the next week they might be going to overtime with Kansas.
Exactly. Did they beat Kansas like 48-46 last year?
Yeah, last year that game, I believe, went to overtime. And it was just a shootout.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.